Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website, georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on story time when we come back. You know, under the terms of a contract called the Old Covenant, it was negotiated by Moses out at Mount Sinai. You and I are entitled to 33 articulable benefits, such as rain in due season, multiplied gold, silver, herds, flocks, and great wealth. Well, George Bush said that what Americans wanted was jobs, jobs, jobs. But that's not what George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin, Moses, or God had in mind when they wrote our Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the Ten Commandments. All of these authorities recognize that real wealth is measured in land, cattle, property, gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. It's not measured in jobs, jobs, jobs. And that's because there's no money in employment. The money is in private business and sales, not in public business or jobs, jobs, jobs. That's why I contend that it's time that we cash in on our inheritance and learn how to collect the benefits of this old covenant contract, and to collect those benefits in gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. That's called property. Instead of collecting credit, debt, usury, inflation, and worthless paper. Now, if you want to learn more about how to do just that, why don't you call and ask for our information on our CD Home School for Adults. And while you're at it, order our free general law CD package. Remember, that's free of charge. The school isn't, but the CD package is. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. And it's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational. And it's free. So you can call right now and order yours. It's 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, we've been talking about some stories from the old-timers, you know, back in the olden days, stories about places that are far, far away and long, long ago. I had an opportunity one time to operate a company out in Boise, Idaho. And there's what we call in the business world, we have what we call businessmen. You've probably heard that term before, you know, businessmen. And then we have business boys. Those are people who want to be businessmen, but they never grow up. They never get to the point in life where they're actually real businessmen. They're kind of business boys. And you start off as a business boy delivering newspapers for the Humboldt Standard. That's where I started. And you have to learn how to do business, how to conduct business. And sometimes we have what we call in the trade a bad businessman. A bad businessman. Now, you want to avoid being a bad businessman, if it's at all possible, because that costs a lot of money, takes a lot of time, effort, and energy, and you don't make very much money. And then there are business boys, you know, and they get out there, and they're working real hard. As my old dad used to say, you know, it's not how hard you work, it's how smart you work. So sometimes learning a couple of tricks of the trade can separate you from the business boys. And we were operating a company back in 1978, 79, 80, along in there. And remember how interest rates got up to about 21%? Oh, it was terrible. And you could hardly do business with interest rates at 21%. Imagine borrowing money and paying 21% interest on that. and then trying to make a profit when your profitability in your company is about 10%, you know, and you're kind of struggling. And so we decided that we would probably be better off if we just liquidated the company, liquidated the stores, liquidated the manufacturing plant in a big liquidation sale. So since that was our business, and since liquidations are very profitable, we decided we'd go ahead and liquidate, and then if at some later time, you know, some years down the road, if the business got back to a point where it was profitable again, maybe we'd get back into that business and do it again. So the decision was made that we would liquidate everything, and when you do that, it's everything goes floor to ceiling, wall to wall, regardless of cost, loss, or value. Have you ever heard those terms before? Everything goes floor to ceiling, wall to wall, regardless of cost, loss, or value. Well, as the sale was going on, everything was going fine, and we were selling everything out floor to floor, wall to wall, ceiling to ceiling, and everything's going along fine. But we had one product over here that wasn't selling so well, and it was light bulbs. You see, we actually were in the furniture business, and so furniture lent itself well to stereos, and so we were having a liquidation sale, and we're selling lots of stereos and lots of waterbeds and lots of furniture, and everything's going fine. But the light bulbs aren't selling. Now, the light bulbs actually weren't part of our business. The light bulbs were a part of a necessity, a necessary part of our business. You see, the building was an old building, and it had light fixtures hanging out of the ceilings. Just regular, ordinary, everyday, garden variety light bulbs. Yeah, about a 100-watt bulb. And they had lots of these all over the ceilings. Well, since it was a multi-story building, it had wooden floors. These wooden floors, when you roll dollies across them, would shake. And when you shake the floor, or when you shake the filament in a light bulb, it doesn't last very long. So the ordinary light bulb is rated at about 750 hours. So these light bulbs didn't give us 750 hours of light for about 75 cents per bulb. They would burn out in maybe 100 hours or 50 hours, whatever it took to run a dolly across the floor, shake the filaments a few times, and then they would burn out. Well, we needed a solution to the problem, and the Sylvania Company came up with the solution. You see, they have a light bulb, 100-watt bulb. It's an odd-shaped bulb, and it goes into traffic lights. And these bulbs were rated at about 7,000 hours, or about 10 times longer than the ordinary light bulb. So we bought those bulbs and we tested them, and sure enough, you could drop them, you could roll dollies around and on the floors, and these bulbs, they just burned on and on and on, you know, like the Eveready battery rabbit, or whatever his name is. And so we bought several cases of them. Now there was several dozen. There was 8 dozen to a box, as I recall. It was about 96 bulbs to a box. Now, the downside to these bulbs, the downside was that they were $3.50 each. Now, if you have a little bit of skill, you could figure out that a light bulb that burns 750 hours for 75 cents is about 1 cent per hour. 75 cents. You know, and then you got, it's less than that. 75 hours for 75 cents is about 1 cent per hour. Okay. So that's your base cost. That's what we're spending every day. And we don't want to spend that much. So we got one that gets 7,000 hours. But it costs, $3.50. So that's 3,500 cents. So you divide 3,500 into 7,000. And that would be 2. See? But for the convenience sake and for the longevity of the bulb, 7,000 hours, and we don't have to change that light bulb. And if you work it out, it saves us labor in changing the light bulbs. It saves us half on the light bulb's value, that is 3,500 cents. and we get 7,000 hours. So we get 2 hours for each penny. It was a breakthrough. You know what I mean? It was like night and day, and we were just really tickled to death. So we bought about, as I recall, there were 6 cases there that we're trying to sell. So we probably bought 6-8 cases. Now, you didn't need to change these bulbs very often. They last twice as long, and it saved us all this money, and so everything's going along. But now we're selling out. And so remember, everything goes floor to ceiling, wall to wall, regardless of cost, loss, or value. And as a result of that, we've got these light bulbs for sale over here, and we didn't try to make a profit. I mean, all we wanted to do was to recover our costs, which was $3.50. Now, the Atlantis Company is a corporation, a straight corporation, and as the chief executive officer, I'm charged by the state of Idaho, you know, to guide and direct. I'm the state's agent. I'm like a commissar. And my job is to liquidate this orderly and pay all the taxes and pay all the payroll taxes and pay the workmen and settle the accounts and close the bank accounts and close the sales tax account number and collect the sales tax and pay it over to the state. I'm the state's agent. See, a corporate officer is an agent of the state. Yeah, just in case you didn't know, you're actually working for God when you work for a corporation. So things are going well in the sale, but they're not going very well with the light bulb sales. One day, an old buddy of mine walks in, and he goes over to the light bulbs, and he's kind of musing to himself. And so I came over and said, "Well, Bob, can I help you?" And he said, "George," he said, "these light bulbs priced at $3.50, 100-watt light bulbs." He says, "You can buy these down at Safeway, you know, for 75 cents. He said, "These bulbs aren't going to sell for $3.50. So I told him the story, 7,000 hours, and it's half price, and you get 2 hours, you know, for a penny. And he said, no, you don't understand. See, Betty Baumwortel, when she comes in to buy light bulbs, she looks at the price. She doesn't look at the 7,000 hours. She looks at those ugly bulbs because they had this strange shape. And then she says, no, that wouldn't fit very well in the lamp. It wouldn't look very good as a light bulb in the ceiling. And so she rejects it. He said to me, I'm afraid, George, that you've got a white elephant there. And when this sale is completed, you are going to have these 6 cases of light bulbs left over, and you're not going to be able to sell them." Well, you know, 96 light bulbs times $3.50 each is about $300 and some a case. And we have a bunch of cases here. In fact, I'll tell you what we had there. It was $3,000 worth or more. So we must have had about 10 cases there. $3.50 a bulb times 96 is $3.36. And I just remember there's $3,000 plus there. And so probably about 10 cases are sitting there. And he said, and I'll tell you what I'll do to ease the pain for you, George. I will buy all of these light bulbs for $300. And I said, "But Bob, be reasonable. We paid $3.50 a bulb, and we're not trying to make a profit. We bought them directly from the Sylvania Company. I imagine if you could buy these at retail, which you can't, or you probably can't, they might cost you $6 or $7 a bulb. See, I mean, they ought to be priced at $7 a bulb because they get 7,000 hours to equal the 75 cents for the 750-hour bulbs that they sell you in your houses. See, they burn out. They put very small filaments in these bulbs so that they will burn out earlier, so you'll buy more light bulbs. I mean, you know, light bulb people, you know, they're not dumb. And I suppose if you put a little bigger filament in there, you probably make those light bulbs last 14,000 hours or 21,000 hours or something like that. But, you know, business is business, and you can't blame the light bulb company for turning out cheap John trash so they can sell more of them. But anyway, $300 I thought was ridiculously low, and I said, "Well, no, Bob, I couldn't do that, not in all good conscience." And so he said, "Well, you're just going to end up with these light bulbs at the end of the sale because you haven't sold any yet, and you're not very likely to sell them in the second half of the sale." And And I said, well, you're probably right there, Bob. We haven't sold any yet, and the sale is about half over. And I got to thinking about, well, what am I going to do with these light bulbs if they get left over at the end of the sale? So I mulled it over, and I mulled it over, and I said, you know, Bob, maybe this is just one of those things that probably we better just suck it in and eat it. So I agreed. I said, okay, we'll sell you the light bulbs for $300, but I needed to document this because, after all, what would happen if we had an audit and the IRS asked me about the company that I operated and directed, and we sold these light bulbs for 10 cents on the dollar? I mean, I wrote a check from the Atlantis Manufacturing Checking Account to the Sylvania Company for $3,000 plus, and now if I take in and sell these bulbs for $300, the state might think that was kind of funny, and they might get after me, and they might charge me with some kind of a crime or an insider trading job or something like that. So I said, I better really document this. So we went over to the cash register, and I rang it into the cash register. I wrote up a sales slip off of a pad, and then I took his check, and I stamped it on the back in great big letters, you know, for deposit only, Atlantis Manufacturing Company. And so I had three paper records of the transaction, you know, just to make sure that everything's on the up and up. After all, we wouldn't want to cheat the government out of any of their money or anything like that, you know, or have them think that we were tax cheats and that we weren't doing everything in our power to protect the state's interest and collect taxes and so on. And so he made the transaction, and then we loaded up the light bulbs in his pickup, and he drove away. But we would like to say that he then lived happily ever after, basking in the light of his successful purchase, but that wasn't to be the case. And so the next day, he came back and he said, I have buyer's remorse. Now, buyer's remorse, for those of you lay people that don't know what that is, that's when you sell something to somebody, and then he goes home and he thinks about it for a while, and he really gets remorseful because he thinks that he got cheated, or for some reason the purchase wasn't all that it was cracked up to be, and so therefore he feels bad about what he's bought. And this buyer's remorse is the nemesis of salesmen, because oftentimes, you know, there are guarantees and you have to take the stuff back after 3 days, see? Or within 3 days. So, you know, you go out and buy a car, you get buyer's remorse, you take the car back the next day or two, and you make them give you your money back. So, we wanted to avoid that if it was all possible. And so when Bob came in, I pointed to the sign on the wall that said, all sales final. No cash refunds. You ever seen a sign like that? All sales final, no cash refunds. So we had that sign on the wall, you know, just in case we had some crybaby that wanted to come back. And so that's what old Bob was doing. You know, good old guy, good old boy, and old buddy, but, you know, just, you know. And then so next thing I knew, tears are welling up in his eyes. Now, nothing worse than having a businessman standing on your floor crying, you know. And he said to me, George, my wife is going to divorce me if I don't get my $300 back. She hated these bulbs. She doesn't like them. They're not the right color scheme. They're not the right shape. They're just everything about them is bad. And I pointed out, I said, you know, they're half price. I mean, stop and think about it. $3.50 a bulb. And at 7,000 hours, they were at half price when I offered them to you. And then you jewed me down to 10%. I mean, come on, Bob, let's be reasonable. And all sales are final, and I've already made the deposit. Your check is in. And this is going to be hard to explain, you know, to the taxing authorities, you know, like the IRS and the State Tax Commission, and God only knows what other bureaucrats and agencies, you know. And then the tears flowed, and I just couldn't stand it anymore. And I said, all right, Bob, it's going to be all right. And I said, I will buy the bulbs from you. I, George Gordon, your old buddy, will buy them from you. I said, take them over to my house and offload them into my garage. And tonight, when I come home, I will give you $300. And so that night, about 10 o'clock, when I got home after the store closed and all, I, I went home and I paid Bob $300 and I took the light bulbs. Now, it's kind of like playing the old maid, isn't it? I mean, first of all, you know, we bought them and the Atlantis company couldn't sell them. And then all of a sudden, Bob bought them and then he got buyer's remorse. And then I bought them and now they're sitting in my garage. I've got them. And what's my wife going to say? I hid them away so she wouldn't see them. Now, so far, everything about these light bulbs is turning up bad, as you can see, and I was sad. You talk about buyer's remorse. Now, I'm sitting here wondering, well, what am I going to do with these light bulbs? So, while I was lamenting my bad fortune and being stuck with these light bulbs over here, an old buddy of mine from Salt Lake City came up, and we were chit-chatting, you know, down at the coffee klatch, and he lamented to me. He said, I'm going bankrupt. And I said, well, Colin, what's the problem? And he said, well, I bought this old warehouse, and the warehouse is fine. I'm not complaining about the warehouse, and the price was right, you know, and I got the warehouse at a good price, and it's located well. It's down on 5th South, and everything is fine, but it's got these wooden floors. And on these wooden floors, on the lower levels, we have light fixtures, you know, just regular, ordinary, everyday, garden variety light fixtures. And when you roll a dolly across the upper floors, across the floor, it shakes. And as the building shakes, the light fixtures shake. And these light bulbs that you buy in the grocery store have very, very tiny filaments that shake, and they cause them to burn out. When you shake these light bulbs, the filaments burn out, and I just can't keep light bulbs in there. And it just costs me, it just keeps me awake at night, you know, with these light bulbs that keep burning out. And I said, Colin, today is your day of salvation. It was like an epiphany. You know what I mean? I said, I told him the light bulb story. And his face lit up. And he said, George, you mean there are light bulbs that you can roll dollies across the floors, shake them, and they don't burn out? And I said, yes. In fact, we had that very same problem here. And I solved the problem. And have I got a deal for you? I mean, I'm going to save your business. I'm going to save you from bankruptcy. I'm going to save your marriage. I'm saving your business. And all I want is $1,500. And he said, you mean you have $3,000 worth of light bulbs and you would sell them to me for only $1,500? And I said, for you, Colin, for an old buddy like you, of course I would. Of course I would. And so, with tears welling up in his eyes, as we were sitting there eating our donuts and drinking our coffee, he said, I don't know how I will ever be able to thank you. I said, Colin, if you'll come over to my place tonight after the store closes, and we'll just load them up in your pickup, and you can just drive off to Salt Lake City into the basking light of Sylvania 7,000-hour light bulbs for a paltry $1,500, but please bring cash. So that night he came over and we loaded up the light bulbs into his van, and I collected $1,500. Now, some of you might sit there and say, well, that sounds like kind of a crazy story. Well, you know, it is true that I was a bad businessman. It is true that while I was at the helm, the chief executive officer, you know, like Ken Lay, operating the Enron company, he was a bad businessman, Ken was. Of course, he sold his stock early, and of course, he made $47 million, but he was a bad businessman because he did not protect the interests of California, and he didn't protect the interests of the Treasury of the United States, and he didn't protect the interests of the stockholders. That's pretty classic. Selfish, self-centered businessman. And I guess I fell into that trap also, because I too was a bad businessman. And I I, too, wrote big checks from the Atlantis Company, and I, too, failed to protect the state's interest, and I, too, failed and lost money. But I want to point out that being a bad businessman is not against the law. But insider trading is against the law. And skimming the profits off of a corporation is against the law. And far be it from little Georgie Gordon to break the law. All right, now with that one out of the way, we call that the light bulb story. I just thought I'd share with you there that little story about bad business. While we're talking about business, I got to tell you a story about Pat Connolly. Pat Connolly was a real character. Now, he was a businessman. You know, we call these small businessmen. You know, the small businessmen in your community, the guys that run little printing companies or run little manufacturing companies. Small business in America is called a company or a business that employs less than 100 employees. So if you're one of these little businessmen, kind of like little Georgie here, I only had 30 employees, and so I qualified as being a small business. Most small businesses don't even have 30 employees. Take the guy that runs the Denny's, for instance. You know, he's got a franchise. He's got a Denny's restaurant. And in the restaurant, if you take a look around, just count the employees. They got a cook, maybe two. Then maybe they'll have a few waitresses, six or eight, maybe. And they probably have a dishwasher, maybe two. And so there's 10 or 12 people working in a restaurant. Maybe the restaurant's open 24 hours a day, so maybe they have three crews. Of 10 each, that would be about 30 employees. So the restaurant down the street is a small business. When you go into the little printing store, you know, Kinko's now isn't little. They're nationwide and they're a franchise and they have chains of stores. But each and every one of those stores is owned by some little businessman who pays a franchise tax. Well, a franchise fee. It's really not a tax to the government, but it's a franchise fee. Like a McDonald's, for instance. It's a big chain, but each and every one of those McDonald's restaurants is owned by a little businessman. A small businessman. And here's a surprising number for you, in case you'd never wondered. How big is small business? Well, small business is very big. In fact, 64% of all of the people who are employed in America work for a small business. Yeah. General Motors is big, and they have hundreds of thousands of employees. But if you take all of the big business enterprises in America, you know, all of the Enrons, General Motors, and Fords, and Microsoft's, and you take all these big businesses, you know, Walmart and all of them, and add up all of their employees together, they represent 25% of all of the employees who earn a paycheck every week. So big business employs 25% of us. Small business employs 64% of us. And then there's the other 10%. The 10%. Okay, now there's a bunch of people out here who are self-employed and work for government. So self-employed people, those are people that just work by themselves. They're selfish, introverted people who don't get along well working in the workplace, and they're also greedy, selfish entrepreneurs. They work all by themselves. They don't care about employing other people. They just care about themselves. I'm one of those. And then you can work for state or local or the federal government. And that represents about 10%. So if you wanted to know where all the people in the country work, well, that's where they work and that's what they produce. Well, Pat Connolly, oh, Pat, he was a small businessman and he used to operate a business called Postal Instant Press. It was located, I think, if I remember right, at Curtis and Fairview and Curtis. And it was a little printing business. Now, he probably had a couple guys working there. They didn't work three shifts a day. They just worked, you know, in the morning from... They probably get to work around 6, 7 o'clock in the morning, open the store, you know, around 8, and then close around 5 or 6, and then work maybe for another couple hours. You know, small businessmen don't go to work 8 hours a day. just in case you were wondering. Small businessmen usually work 12, 14, 16, 18 hours a day. And that's because somebody has to go to the store and has to make sure that it's open on time and that it's open and ready for the employees to come in so that they can go to work. And then he has to be there after the store closes, you know, to clean up all of the last-minute details, you know, like answering the phone and answering the phone messages, and then selling. He has to be on the telephone selling, and he might have appointments that he has to make and things like that. And then maybe there's a last-minute rush order, you know, that has to be finished up. And the employees, you know, they go home. Employees, at 4:30, you know, their mind isn't on work. Their mind is on, I got to go home so I can get a can of beer and sit down and watch Three's Company. So the owner of the little company, this is the Pat Connolly, you know, he operates the Postal Instant Press, and he's making pretty good money. I mean, he's not complaining or hurting. You know, he lives in a nice house, lives in a nice neighborhood, and everything's going along fine. But Pat Connolly has problems with OSHA, the EPA, the State Tax Commission, and he has a problem with his employees, and he has a problem with the Department of Employment. I mean, if you're a small businessman, you just have scads and scads and oodles of visits and problems and audits that come from all kinds of agencies of government that like to come in and raise hell with you and get in your way of making profit and serving your customers and making your payroll. And so Pat Connolly woke up one day and he said, you know, I think I've had about enough of this. All of us businessmen at some point in time wake up. It's called midlife crisis. And we get to be about 40, 45, 50 years old. We go through this thing called midlife crisis. And we say, you know, I think I've just had about enough of this horse pucky. And I think I will sell this business to some enterprising young fellow who wants to come up in the world. And so we old guys, we sell these businesses off to some young kid just graduated from college and hasn't got his head screwed on straight yet. And so Pat did. He sold the Postal Instant Press up on Curtis and Fairview and retired. I think he was 47. Businessmen do that. And then he said to me one day that he was going to go out and do something more intelligent. Now, I got to give you a reminder here as to what we're doing, and we'll come back with more on Pat Connolly, the businessman, versus the business boy, right after this. Now, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri, and The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law. 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and if you'd like more information, you can go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about business boys. you know, you have businessmen, you have business boys. I was a business boy for many, many years, and there is a side effect from that. We call it bad business. There's good business, and then there's bad business. Now, bad business isn't against the law, but bad businessmen lose money. They don't make the big profits like Enron and Global Crossing and these big, huge enterprises that when they go belly up threaten the entire economy. Little businessmen, when they go belly up, nobody cares. There's no funeral, and there's no tears, and there's no lamenting. So here's old Pat. He retires. He sells out his business, but he kept certain important machines. You see, if you're a printer, you have more than one machine, and so he saved several of these machines, and he moved them home and put them in his garage. Now, you might wonder, why would a man sell his printing business and then save several key machines and take them home and put them in his garage? Well, that's old Pat for you, you know, so there he is. One day, old Pat's down at my office, and he comes in, and he picks up one of my invoices. And he looks at it, and he says, "Wow, this is good work." He says, "Who does your printing?" And I said, "Well, I had it done across the street, Pat." And he said, "That guy really does good work." And these are NCR, that's National Cash Register, four-part invoice. And without carbons, you know, in the old days we used to have these carbon papers you had to put in. Well, these are carbon, you know, they copy through and they don't have any carbon. I forget what they call them now. Anyway, they're a little pricey, you know, because you don't have to put carbons in there. And you make four copies, you know, so when you're writing up an invoice and you have to have more than one copy, these NCR invoices are kind of handy, or at least they were. And so he said, "What does he charge for those?" And I said, 50 cents apiece, 50 cents each. And he says, "Woo, that's pretty pricey." And I said, "Yeah, you know, every time we write up one of those and we make a mistake and throw it away, we're throwing away 50 cents. And, you know, they are kind of pricey when you're throwing them away. You know, if you're writing up a $30,000 order, that 50 cents is nothing. But when you're writing up a $300 order, you know, and then you know, it costs you 50 cents to write up the order." And so he said to me, he said, "Well, Would you like to have those printed up for 25 cents each?" And I said, "Well, of course I'd like to have them printed up for 25 cents each." And he said to me, "You know, George, if you would pay me in cash, C-A-S-H, I think I could do those for 25 cents each. Half price." Now, half price is the businessman's magic number. When you tell a businessman that you're going to give him a 10% savings, you know, that's good. Or if you say he can get a contractor's discount of 20%, that's better. And when you say that you've got a real deal, you know, that's even more better yet. But when you tell him that you're going to give it to him at half price, you know, his eyes just light up like a slot machine in Harold's Club. And so my eyeballs were just rolling in my head, you know, like a slot machine barrel. And I said, well, "Pat, if I pay you cash, you see, then I won't be able to take that off as a tax deduction because it's a problem in being able to document the fact that that's a business expense. And that's why we have checks and checking accounts." And then Pat told me about checks, and he said, "You know, when somebody writes you a check and it bounces, and then you have to go collect it, and the bill is $500, and the lawyer wants $5,000 to take the case on, you lose a lot of $500 bills." Now, Pat said to me, "I wouldn't accuse you of writing me a bad check. Heaven forbid. God only knows, George, what an honest, forthright businessman you are. And that you would never write me a bad check, and that you'd never stiff me. But you know, the businessman across the street is charging you 50 cents because some other people come in and write him bad checks. And so he has to charge 50 cents because he has to make up for the losses that he suffers from employee pilfering, employee theft. and from shoplifting and from bad checks and from taxes and from bureaucratic meddling and from overregulation. And all of these insurances that he has to buy, he has to be insured and bonded and regulated. And when you add all of those costs up, little Georgie, it equals 50 cents out of every dollar that a businessman has to spend in order to stay in business. So if you would like to have those invoices done for 25 cents, then we need to eliminate taxes and regulation, insurance, bonds, employee theft and pilfering, and bad checks, and all of the expenses and overhead that goes into business that the average Sally housewife never sees when she walks into the store and contemplates buying a product. And I said, "Oh, gee, Pat, I didn't know that. What a revelation. Pat, are you telling me that 50 cents out of every dollar that we pay for goods and services out in the marketplace is caused by or exacerbated by government and government agents and taxes and shoplifters and bad check writers and employees who steal and pilfer and smoke cigarettes instead of work? Oh my God! Can you imagine the savings in business and the restructuring of prices if all of us would go back to our Constitution and go back to sound business practices that our founding fathers gave us at Article 1, Section 10 of our Constitution? And we all practice the Ten Commandments and the laws of God. Why, we could save half of everything that we're now spending. Why, we could increase our standard of living by double without ever lifting a finger to work harder or sweat more. I said, "My God, Pat, what a revelation." Now, getting back to the business at hand, I said, "Pat," I said, "for a 50% savings over here, maybe I could come up with cash." So I said, "Why don't you give it a shot?" And he said, "Well, how many do you need?" And I said, "Well, make me 100. And he said, "George, let me explain another very important point in business." And he said, "That is quantity. If you'd like to get a quantity discount, then you have to buy more than one. You know, when you walk into the store and you buy a light bulb and it costs you 75 cents, it costs money to buy a case and then break it up into 96 parts and then stock it and put it on the shelf. Now, when you come in and buy a case, you can get a discount because it takes just as much time to pick up one light bulb as it does to pick up one case of light bulbs. And so we have to have more money for one light bulb than we do 96. I don't know if any of you thought about that, but if you buy in quantity or buy in bulk, you get it cheaper. So I said, "Oh, Pat, what a revelation. I didn't know that. You mean that if I buy 100 invoices, the price would probably be higher than 25 cents per invoice?" And he said, "That's right. That's right, little Georgie. You see, if you buy 1,000 invoices, then I could do it for $250. But if you buy 100 invoices, I have to have 50 cents each." "Oh, I didn't know that." He said, "Well, you know, you live and learn. As time goes on, you get to be smarter and smarter." And he said, you know, you could buy 2,000 invoices and I'd probably shave that down to 20 cents. 4,000 invoices, we might get it down to 15 cents. I said, wow. Wow. You mean when we go into Kinko's and we order a copy and it costs us a dime, if we ordered thousands of copies, we might get them for just pennies? And he said, you got it. You got it. Yeah, when you go into Kinko's and you buy one copy, it costs you a dime. When you buy 10,000 copies, they cost you a penny apiece. Isn't that marvelous? I said, I didn't know that. So, you know, when you're buying in bulk and when you pay cash, you get a discount. Most people don't know that. So I said, well, in that case, Pat, why don't you make me up 1,000 of them and I will pay you $250 in $20 bills. And I think you could probably have my business from here on out. And he said, now that's talking. So old Pat went home, he made up 1,000, he brought him in, I gave him $250. Now, I saved $250. Now here's another little trick that most business boys don't know. Here's what it is. That $250 savings that we made right there in that transaction goes right straight to our bottom line. You see, I don't have to pay anybody to produce that $250. There's no labor. There's no taxes. There's no insurance. There isn't any government bureaucrat. There isn't any regulation. All of those things that go into making up a businessman's cost of doing business or cost of goods sold are eliminated. And that's why these big corporations, they like to merge, you see, because let's suppose we got Company A and Company B. And both of these companies are about the same size and they're competitors. Now, if Company A is competing with Company B for the limited number of customers that are out there buying this product, if these two companies were to merge together, each one of these companies has a payroll department. And one payroll department could do the payroll for both companies. And so the 10 people working in the payroll department over here of Company A can be terminated, and the payroll employees of Company B can do the payroll for both Company A and Company B. Isn't that a surprise? Woo! Can you imagine what we could do by streamlining the production facilities of Company A and Company B? For instance, Company A may have a cutoff saw. Company B also has a cutoff saw. And they have two sawyers working Company A and Company B cutoff saws in each company. So if we were to merge the two companies, we would operate Company A's cutoff saw two shifts a day, eliminate Company B's cutoff saw, and eliminate Company B's employee and his retirement benefits. And the reason we will eliminate Company B's sawyer and replace him with a swing shift new man is because Company B's sawyer has been here for 30 years and is about to retire, and we can screw him out of his retirement if we get rid of him. Isn't that just real special and mercenary? Yes, sirree, Bob. Us businessmen are real cutthroats when it comes to saving money and putting it right straight down on the bottom line. Yes, sir, that's called the merger. And sometimes if Company B doesn't want to merge with Company A, we can come up with what's known as a hostile takeover. And I'll tell you the story about the hostile takeover. There was a big furniture buyer down in Ogden, Utah. And I'm just a little guy with 30 employees, and I had about, maybe 30, 40 customers. And these 30 or 40 customers are all wholesale customers. They're furniture stores, you see. And so, I forgot the name of this furniture store, but you people out there in Utah probably know who it is. It's the biggest furniture store in Utah. And they're located right there in Ogden. Well, not in Ogden. They're outside town. You know, they're not dumb, you know. They don't want to pay city taxes, so they moved out outside town. I forgot their name now. But anyway, they're big. They're big, big. They're real big, 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 you know, for little guys like me. And they buy from companies like Ethan Allen and Broyhill Hill and Pennsylvania House and places like that, you know. And these big furniture companies in the East offer discounts for quantity purchases. And so, you know, when you buy a carload, that's two truckloads. One carload comes in a railroad car, you get a pretty good discount. Now, if you're a big manufacturer with thousands of employees like Broyhill Hill or Pennsylvania House, they sell with what they call 90-day dating. That is, you buy a carload of furniture, and this company that buys from you, the furniture store that buys from you, they don't pay you for 90 days. Yeah, that's right. The carload comes in. Of course, you got to have good credit to do that. So. And you got to have lots of money. Lots of money and good credit. And the retailer over here, he's kind of calling the shots because, you know, if you don't give him 90-day dating, he doesn't buy Pennsylvania House. He buys Broyhill. If Broyhill doesn't compete, then they go to Ethan Allen or they go to somebody else. So I happened to go in there one day, and I'm very excited about, you know, getting my production capacity up to where I could make a truckload a week. I'm making two carloads a month. Now, for a little furniture company turning out two carloads a month, you know, that's pretty heady stuff. Well, anyway, I walked in there, showed him my catalog, and the buyer calls me up one day, and he says, yeah, we'd like to try your line. Tell you what we'll do. We will take a carload for openers just to see if you're any good. And then they give us 90-day dating, which is standard to industry. And we'll try your line, and if it's any good, you know, we'll start ordering more. So I happened to be down in that neck of the woods, so I went on down to Salt Lake City, and I had a big account down there. It's called Western Sales. And I happened to go in there, and I had an old buddy in there, and his name's Colin. And I said, Colin, you're not going to believe this, but I was just up in Ogden, and I stopped by this furniture company, and I forgot their names now. It's a very famous company there in Utah. And I told him, I said, they said they'd take a carload. And I said, wow, I'm really excited about landing that account. And my old buddy said, oh my God, I'm sorry to hear that, George. And I said, why are you sorry to hear that? And he said, well, he said, because you'll be out of business in about 1 year. And I guess I better start looking for a new supplier. And I said, well, are you jealous? And he said, oh no, I'm not jealous. And I said, well, are you concerned about competition from them? And he said, no, not concerned about competition. And I'm not jealous. It's just that they're going to make a hostile takeover and take over your company, and you'll end up working for them. And I said, what? And he said, sure. He said, you see, when you walked in the door, they told you that they'll take a carload, and they got to have 90-day dating, which is the standard in the industry. And I said, yeah, as a matter of fact, that's what they said. And he said, you know, I pay you cash. I pay you cash in advance and take all of my discounts. And you operate, you work your factory, you work your company, you make your payroll on my cash. I don't make you wait 90 days. I don't make you finance it. I don't make you pay interest at the bank. You don't have enough money to turn out a carload for this company. You'll have to go to the bank and borrow money. And I said, yeah. He said, you don't have production capacity to fulfill that order. You're going to have to put on a swing shift. And I said, yeah, I will. And he said, and then you'll put on a swing shift and you'll double your capacity, which means that when you have double capacity and a bank loan, you have to maintain that production level to service your debt. And I said, yes. And he said, then they'll double the order to two carloads, and you'll have to borrow more money. And I said, yes. Isn't it wonderful? Borrow money, pay interest, hire more employees, produce more product,
make more profit. And he said, then they'll come to you and double their order to 4 carloads. And I said, God, it's wonderful. Look at the business I'll be doing and the money I'll be making. And he said, that's when they will say to you, when they have you strung out and in debt up over your eyeballs, that they have found another supplier and they can buy it for 10% less. And that you have to meet the competition. And because of your debt structure, you'll have to eat the 10%. What that means in the trade, boys and girls, is that you'll have to absorb that 10% discount. Even though you're not getting any cash, in fact, it's worse. You have to go to the bank and borrow the money so that you can make the goods to give to them. Now, what they'll do is they'll take your goods and they'll sell it in 30 days and then order another carload for 90-day dating. And by the time you get paid for load number one, you will have already delivered load number three. You will always be bankrolling and financing their inventory for them free while you're paying 10, 12, 14% interest to the bank so that you can have their account. And then they will administer the coup de grace. I said, what's that? What's that, Colin? And he said, they will then come to you. And they will say, we will not pay you $50 a frame. We will now pay you $30 a frame. Now, your production cost is $25. To produce it for $30 means that you've cut your profit to the bare bones. You will be working like slave labor. You will have to cut your payroll. You will have to cut corners and produce more for less. This was before the outsourcing to China. And I said, oh my God, what happens next? And he said, then when you can no longer meet your payroll, when you can no longer operate your business, when you can no longer make it and you're faced with bankruptcy, they will rush in like knights riding on huge horses to save you by buying you out at about 30 cents on the dollar. But then they can't operate your company, so they will hire you to manage their Atlantis Manufacturing Company Incorporated. That's called a hostile takeover. I said, oh my God. I think I'll call them and cancel their order. And I did. I called them and said, oh, I really don't think that I can afford to do business with you. And so I stuck with my small business and with my small businessmen that I could buy, sell, and trade with and make a profit without being destroyed. All right, boys and girls, we're about out of time. I'm going to have to leave it right there and remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Know The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. If you'd like to order one, then call us at 417-273-4967. Remember, it's free. It doesn't cost you anything. It's gratis. And you can call right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. We got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.